Good morning. I join with Ryan in saying welcome to Ashworth Road. We're glad that you guys are here this morning. I hope that you're glad to be here. My name is Brent, if I haven't met you yet, and I'm the lead pastor here, and I think, I hope that you're encouraged by being here today. You know, today is the second Sunday of the new year, and we began a series last week that it's a little difficult sometimes, it's a little hard sometimes to hear, because we're calling it Get Fit, Being Whole and Holy in the new year. Now, I know when Ryan was preaching last week, he asked how many of you were resolution makers, and the numbers were very slim, and for me, I'm that way as well. I'm not really a resolution maker. But just so you know, I thought this was interesting. If you look at statistics on New Year's resolutions, do you know that at the end of the first week after the new year, the number of people that have quit already is 25%, have given up or failed. So if that describes you, way to go, quitter. Good job. I know many of us aren't resolution makers, me included, but for many of us, the new year, means a lot to us. It represents something to us. It's that fresh start, a chance to start over, begin with that clean slate, to take just a moment and kind of evaluate life, where we are in various places, health-wise and relationally, emotionally, financially. All these things kind of come into play, and we begin to evaluate and we say, how can we make our lives better? What can we do? What changes can we make to kind of improve from where we are? Because I think all of us would agree that the last thing we want is to go through this life and to get to the end and figure out that we were the same when we died as we were when we were 21 or 24 or 26. We're hoping that we're a little bit more mature, we're a little bit wiser, and the things through life that have taught us things, we're hoping that we are a little bit more whole and holy by the time we get there. And that's where this series comes in, Get Fit. We're going to spend several weeks looking at these different areas to see how can we do this? What steps can we take to actually be more whole and holy in our lives? And of course, last week, Ryan did draw the short straw. He had to speak on everybody's favorite topic, what your body looks like, being body fit, right? And we began with that topic because it is the most obvious place to start. And I don't say it's the most obvious as I look around the room at you. Please don't take that as a visual judgment or anything. It's just more people make resolutions about health and diet and fitness plans in January than they do any other time of the year. And so we begin that new year and we say, I'm going to eat healthier. I'm going to eat better. I'm going to lose weight. I'm going to go to the gym. I'm going to work out. And we promise ourselves that. So we start that new diet. We say we're going to lose X number of pounds, 25 pounds, 30 pounds, whatever it is. Maybe you do something to help motivate yourself. You hang up that favorite dress you have or that favorite pair of pants or that one thing that you can't quite squeeze into any longer. I speak from this from experience even this past week as I tried some pants on and I'm like, wow, I'm going to put somebody's eye out if that button decides to pop off at any moment. So you put that up and you look at it every day, and for a few days it works, but all too often life happens and it gets messy and that diet is thrown out the window at the first opportunity for that chocolate cake or cookies. That's maybe just my thing, but you know, we find that membership to the Y begins to get used less and less. That new treadmill we've just purchased that's going to revolutionize our life, it becomes a great place to store our clothes and hang things on. I wish I was kidding, but many of us know that. We've been there. I've put a moratorium on the Clark House. We will not buy any more exercise equipment ever because the last few times we've done it lasted about a week, and then we end up either selling it for very cheap or just having to do something to get it out of the way because it's just another piece of furniture to deal with. But what I hope you took away from last week is what Ryan said, was that it's not about a number. It's never about a number. We have to move beyond the scales. We have to move beyond those numbers of waist size or dress size or whatever. And we need to figure out what can we do just to be healthier. If for no other reason than the fact that when we are body fit, we can accomplish more. We can serve better. We can love better. We can give better when we are healthier, when we are body fit. And so that's why we begin there. Today we're going to move to another topic that I think for many of us is still a very difficult topic. We don't like talking about who we are and what we look like, but we also don't like talking about relationships and how we become relation fit. How can we make sure that our relationships are healthy and encouraging and Christ-centered without cutting everyone off, without moving to a monastery and living completely isolated just to make sure our relationships are where they need to be? Now, I know some of you may already be thinking, wow, you guys are amazing because week one we come to church and you want to talk about how bad I look, and week two I come to church and you want to tell me how screwed up my relationships are. I've said this before, in the South we call this meddling. And yes, over the next several weeks, we're probably going to be doing a little meddling in your life. But that's okay, because we want to make sure that we are whole and holy, complete, pure, and set apart from God. That we are people who can go out into the world and serve others. And if we're going to do that, we need to be willing to shine the light into our own lives, into every nook and cranny, every crevice in our lives. We have to be willing to allow the light of God to come and shine in. And even in those most difficult moments, when we shine the light in and we find out, yes, Brent, you're compensating for some lack of fulfillment with food. You need to put the donut down. You know, I mean, that's okay, because I understand that it's a loving God who is speaking those words to me. It's a God who cares more about who I am than my comfort, and He wants me to be the best that I can be. And so my willingness to shine the light into my life is very important. And our personal health is important. But also, equally important, I think, for many of us, is our relational health. The relationships we have with people around us really do matter. What's interesting about relationships is you do not have to get very far in the Bible to see how important this topic is. In fact, if you look at the Bible, I believe that this book, from start to finish, is an entire book about relationships. From the very beginning, we see a God who steps into creating this, you and me, and creating everything for the purpose of relationship. And when He created Adam, He looked at Adam, and it's the one time in His creation where He said, "This isn't good." He said, "Man should not be alone." And so not just a relationship with God was important. He looked and He said, "You need other people around you also." And so He created Eve. And from that, community sprang forth and we had relationship with one another. From the very beginning, we see that. You continue to read throughout the book. And even Jesus Himself, who was questioned about what is the most important, what are the greatest commandments, Jesus is questioned, and He looks and He tells them what? He says that the greatest things you need to be worried about are all about relationship. What's the first one? Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and all your strength. Love, that is all about relationship, our relationship with God. And then He says the second greatest commandment is equal to that. Love your neighbor. And even when we get to the end of this book, when we find out when it's all said and done and there's a new heaven and a new earth one day, we see that the ultimate fulfillment of this is so that the relationships that we have with God and that we have with one another that have been destroyed by sin, that have been marred and messed up and screwed up and are just messy and all goofy sometimes, we see that in the end, the ultimate outcome is restored relationships with God and with one another. This book is all about relationships from start to finish. So if the entire Bible is about relationships, I think we need to pause occasionally and evaluate how relationally fit am I. Now, I do want to make a disclaimer to this message, because when we talk about relationships, we can get very specific and very detailed. But today, I want us to take a 30,000-foot view Every one of these points that I'm going to make today could be subdivided into a specific message about a specific relationship. For example, we could talk about it in relationship to marriage or to parenting or to work or the friends we keep. But we want to look at this as general overall guidance that can be applied to all your relationships. And I will tell you, as we begin looking at what it means to be relationally fit, for many of you, it means starting at the closest relationships you do have in your home. Figure out how what we read and study today figures in to improving and helping your marriage, your parenting relationships, your work relationships, and allow this to just kind of spread out. Move it to the broader areas of your life. And just one other quick note, each one of these points could probably be a sermon unto themselves. I promise I will not make them each a sermon. I will keep it brief and direct so that we can get out of here some point today. So where do we begin with looking at how to be relation fit? I think we have to start with our relationship with others and specifically how what we have done has impacted somebody else. How what we have done has changed or challenged or affected those around us. And specifically, those times when we have relationships where we have done damage or we've caused difficulty in that relationship. Now, I understand that we never want to start here. It's much easier for us to look at the other person and point fingers and say, but them, but they, but them. It's easier for us to point out what everyone else has done wrong or to show how they've been the problem. But if you're married or you've ever been married, you know how far that line of thinking gets you, right? When you're in a marriage and something's not right between you and your spouse, it never does any good, right, for you to go, well, it's all them. How quickly does that get resolved? Yeah, exactly. Those that aren't married, let me just tell you, it doesn't. It never gets resolved. You have to begin by looking at yourself. And from a very early point in my life, I learned a very valuable lesson that told me that Brent is responsible for Brent. I can't control anyone else's actions. I can't control anyone else's attitudes or behavior. I am responsible, though, completely for what I do, and I can only control that. And so that is why we must start with what have we done in our relationships that might be making us unfit. In Matthew chapter 5, Jesus is preaching a very important sermon. It's his most famous sermon, the Sermon on the Mount. And he spends some time in Matthew chapter 5 talking to the crowd, teaching the crowd about relationships. And he's in this section where it's very interesting because he's talking about murder. And of course, most of us look at it and we go, well, that's not, well, sometimes I feel like I want to murder somebody, but no, I would never actually do it. And it's in this section where Jesus begins to challenge and say, you know, it's not as much about what you do, even though that's important. What is equally or more important is how you feel. That's equally as much important. Your attitude behind the emotion is just as critical. And as he's talking about this, and he says, don't just not murder, but don't hate someone. He comes to this place and he says this. He says, Matthew 5:23, therefore, if you are offering your gift at the altar, and there remember that your brother or sister has something against you, leave your gift there in front of the altar. First go and be reconciled to them. Then go, come and offer your gift. Now think about that for a second. Jesus is telling us something that we don't like to hear, a little secret that he's pointing out about human nature. You ready for this? It's going to change your life. You are not always right. I know, shocking, isn't it? There are times when you and I are wrong. There are times in our relationships where we've done something. We've said something stupid. We've slighted someone. We've done something offensive. And this can either be accidental or on purpose. But I can guarantee you that if you take just a second right now and think, have I ever done something to offend somebody else? It'll take you about that long to come up with something in your mind. If you need help, just elbow your spouse. They'll be glad to tell you one. Probably this morning. Now, I understand that often when we offend someone, our immediate reaction is typically, I hope they don't remember. Let's just forget and pretend like it didn't happen. Or my personal favorite is to look at that person and say, why are you so stinking sensitive? Get over it. Right? Right, Amy? It's me, right? But what Jesus is telling us here is that if you are wrong, and there are times when you will be, if someone has taken offense to you and you know it, you need to take care of it. In order to be relation fit, it begins first with seeking forgiveness. And what's so interesting to me about this is that the way Jesus frames this example, he says, if you are at church, if you are in the middle of singing that worship song, if you are in the middle of offering a sacrifice, which is what he said, which, let's just think about that. Worshiping God would have been one of the highest activities that Jesus would have imagined, right? And what does he tell us to do when we recognize that an offense has been done on our behalf or by us? He says, stop what you're doing. Get that. He's saying, stop your act of worship. Now, I'm not encouraging anyone to get up and leave right now. Please listen to the rest of the sermon. It'll be beneficial, I promise. But that's essentially what he's saying. He's saying, stop singing that song. Stop reading the Bible. Stop praying right then. Get up and go find that person and seek forgiveness from them. Own what you have done. Tell them what you've done is wrong and ask for them to forgive you. Right in the middle, Jesus is saying, stop justifying what you're doing. Stop blaming someone else. Be man enough, be woman enough to go to the person you've offended and do what you can to seek reconciliation. Not long ago, here at Ashworth Road, someone came to talk to me about something. It was on a Sunday. And just to be honest, after you've preached twice, Ryan can attest to this, when you've preached a couple of times, your frame of mind is really goofy. This is very emotionally draining to get up here and do this twice. And this person came to me with a very serious topic, something that was very important to them. And honestly, it bothered me. I didn't like it. And I was offended. And I let the person know that. And I didn't do it in the most gracious way. I was dismissive. Honestly, I was a little bit harsh. And rude. Now, I know that may shock, well, no one. But after, and I mean immediately after, like within 10 minutes of that happening, I knew something was wrong. Now, my gut reaction was to stop and go, I had to blow over. They didn't take it that way. It's okay. I could have blamed that person. I could have said, they should know better than to hit me with something like that after I preach. That is a difficult time to get into a serious discussion right then and there. I'm trying to greet people as they leave. It's not a great time. I could have hoped it'd go away, but I knew it wouldn't. But even beyond that, I knew I couldn't let it go away. Something within my spirit was telling me that I had to do something about this. The Holy Spirit was working within me, pointing out to me how, honestly, what the Spirit said is, Brent, you didn't really demonstrate the fruit of the Spirit in that situation, now did you? If you remember, the fruit of the Spirit is love, didn't do much of that, joy, peace, patience, not a lot of patience, kindness, you weren't really kind, gentleness, there was no gentleness in that response, self-control, not a lot of that either. I knew what I had done was wrong, and I knew I had to fix it. So I did. I reached out to that person as quickly as I could, and I did apologize, and I asked them to forgive me, and I told them exactly what I told you right then. As I looked at them, and I said, I need you to understand that I know what you were saying was important. There's no excuse for what I did. I was not kind to you. My response to you was not gentle, and I had no patience. I apologize. Please forgive me. The Spirit of God will speak to us, those who follow Jesus, those who are seeking to have relationships that are healthy, that are Christ-centered. The Spirit of God will speak to us and let us know when we need to respond. Because relationships that are relation-fit are relationships where we seek forgiveness when needed. I understand that means swallowing your pride. I understand it means coming in a position of humility. But I also know that that is what's required, and that is what Jesus is saying when he says, don't stop whatever you're doing, even something I may think is the most important thing you can do. Stop it right then and go and take care of that offense. So first we need to seek forgiveness. But you know, there are some times in those rare instances where it wasn't you that messed up, where somebody did something to you. And the next part of having healing relationships is not that we seek forgiveness, it's that we offer forgiveness. A little later in that same sermon in the book of Matthew, by the way, which looks to be a pretty long sermon, so no grief from you people if I get a little wordy. I told somebody, it's been a few weeks since I've gotten to preach, so I'm just being like Jesus today. Thank you. In Matthew 6, Jesus is teaching them how to pray. And he's modeling it for them. And he says, this is how you should pray. And it's very familiar to most of us. We've probably heard it even if you've never been in church. It's known as the Lord's Prayer. But in that Lord's Prayer, he models for us what forgiving others is supposed to look like. Matthew 6, 12 through 15, Jesus says this. He says, and forgive us our debts as we also have forgiven our debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from the evil one. For if you forgive other people when they sin against you, your heavenly Father will also forgive you. But if you do not forgive others their sins, your Father will not forgive your sins. Again, in dealing with people, a lot of times I hear the question, why should I forgive? That person, they really hurt me. They don't really deserve my forgiveness. And I want to just say right here, I understand. I don't want to be glib or trite in saying this because I understand that in relationships there are a lot of ins and outs. And unless somebody is really digging into that situation, I can't just speak into every situation with an overall general statement. But as people of the kingdom of God, forgiveness should be a way of life for us. Regardless of what people have done to us, regardless of whether or not someone meant to do it, we have to learn how to forgive. Now, I do want to point out that what I think forgiveness doesn't mean is I don't think it means you become naive or stupid. It doesn't mean you're a doormat or ignorant and you let people take advantage of you. But it does mean that we exhibit to people, the people around us, the people that have offended us, we exhibit to them the same level of forgiveness that we have experienced in Jesus Christ. And just in case you have forgotten, the forgiveness that those who follow Jesus have received is unfathomable. It is so deep and so rich and so wide and unending. And when we understand the forgiveness that we have experienced, I think forgiving others becomes a little easier. Did not say it was easy, but I say it helps us keep things in perspective. What's so critical to understanding is in both seeking forgiveness and offering forgiveness, it's not just something that a pastor or someone who wrote a self-help book thinks would be a nice gesture for you to do. It's not just that. It's not just something I'm saying, hey, if you'll forgive somebody, you'll feel better about yourself. Because when Jesus talked about forgiveness in Matthew chapter 6, he tied it to our own relationship with God. And he tells us that if we are unwilling to forgive, or if we're unwilling to seek forgiveness, there are direct spiritual implications to you and to me. We can't just go through life and say, I refuse to forgive, because it will impact your relationship with God. Our ability to forgive, whether somebody's asked for it or not, it demonstrates our understanding of what Jesus has done for us and the forgiveness he has offered us. I'm not telling, I look back at my life and there are story after story, moment after moment, where I look at times where people have hurt me and offended me, been offensive to me. People who have lied about me around to other people. People have lied about me to my face. There have been people that have completely done me wrong. And trust me, I remember most of them. Forgive and forget is not necessarily humanly possible most of the time. It can be done. But I remember most of the time people offended me in some way. But what I do know is that as long as I held on to that offense, I found that more times than I would like to admit, my unforgiveness did nothing more than to keep that person in my life, in my thoughts, in my emotions. I continued to be consumed with them and what they had done. By me being unwilling to forgive, I gave that person power over my life. But when I could finally release it and I could finally get to a place and forgive, and I'm just going to tell you, I'm not saying it happened in 30 minutes. I can remember instances in my life where it took over a year to forgive somebody. That should tell you just how weak spiritually I can be sometimes. It's not easy. When someone offends you, it's not just you snap your fingers, oh, I forgive you and it's done. No, there is real hurt. There is real pain. But when I could finally release it and forgive, that is when I was able to find peace. And the control that that person had on me was gone. And it was only through forgiving that I could cut the tie and finally move on. One final note on offering forgiveness. Sometimes forgiving needs to be done in person. Sometimes you need to go to somebody, and if they know they've offended you, and even if they don't seek it out, sometimes you need to take the step to go to them and say, hey, I just want you to know this was very offensive to me. You hurt me, but I forgive you. But there are times when bringing that person back into your life only introduces more pain. And I think that simply forgiving people before God can be enough. Don't let that be an excuse not to seek someone out. But I think if there is a horrible, damaged, bad relationship in your life, it can be foolish to step back into that. God and you can deal with this, and ultimately God will speak to you and tell you whether or not you need to seek that person out face to face or not. So to have healthy relationships, we need to be willing to seek forgiveness and we need to be willing to offer forgiveness. But there's just one more thing I think that's equally important to know. And that is we need to have discernment to know when relationships are detrimental to our lives. In the book of Matthew chapter 18, Jesus is settling a dispute between his disciples. And in talking to them, he makes a very interesting statement about relationships, especially those in relationships that we have that pull us away from God. Matthew 18, 6 through 9, Jesus tells his disciples, he says, if anyone causes one of these little ones, those who believe in me. So look at that. Jesus qualifies the statement he just made. He's not talking about children or infants. He's talking about his disciples, okay? That if anyone causes one of his disciples to stumble, it would be better for them to have a large millstone hung around their neck and to be drowned in the depths of the sea. Woe to the world because of the things that cause people to stumble. Such things must come, but woe to the person through whom they come. If your hand or your foot causes you to stumble, cut it off and throw it away. It is better for you to enter life maimed and crippled than to have two hands or two feet and be thrown into eternal fire. And if your eye causes you to stumble, gouge it out and throw it away. It's better for you to enter life with one eye than to have two eyes and be thrown into the fire of hell. This is not a look at, love, and feel good passage, is it? But these are the words of Jesus, and there's a very important thing that he's saying even in the difficulty. Because Jesus needs you to understand that if there are relationships in your life that are pulling you away from him, you probably shouldn't be in those relationships. If the relationships you have are making you look more like the world and less like his child, then we need to be willing to say, I'm not strong enough at this point to be in this relationship. Now, Jesus is not saying you can only have Christians as friends. That doesn't make any sense, does it? He is not making that statement. But he is making the statement to say there are some of you that are not strong enough in faith. There are some of you that are still at stages in your life where you're growing, where you need to recognize that some of those relationships are causing you to pull away from that faith rather than to push you into it. And at this point in your life, you don't need to have those relationships. You need to know when enough's enough, and you need to know when you need to walk away. If you have relationships that are causing you to stumble in your relationship with God, it may be time to say, time out. We need to make sure that our influence for God is greater than the world's influence on us and pulling us away from God. I'm going to be blunt here. Some of us, some of you have relationships in your life that are bad for you spiritually. And it's time for either you to become the greater influence in that relationship or for you to sever it. And I don't mean permanently sever it. I'm not saying it's gone for good. You never truly cut someone off. You continue to pray for that person. You continue to interact with that person on a more limited basis. But you have to understand that in your spiritual growth and development, the relationships we keep have a direct impact on your relationship with God. And we have to decide what is more important, our relationship with the world, our relationship with God. Again, I'm not even saying it's permanent and forever. I'm just saying that if you're not strong enough currently to resist the temptation that's causing you to stumble, you need to step out of that relationship until you are strong enough and can step back in. If we want to be relation fit, we have to make sure we're not allowing relationships in our lives to pull us from our relationship with Jesus. As I close, ultimately, what I want you to know today is I want to just encourage you that in your relationships, be intentional. Be on purpose in your relationships. A lot of times we don't think about them. We give little thought to them and we don't think about the effects they have on us. We don't think about their influence in our lives. But being able to evaluate your relationships and figure out who do you need to seek forgiveness from? Who do you need to offer forgiveness from? What relationships do you need to lean into? What relationships do you need to lean out of? That's important for us if we're going to find relational fitness in our lives this year. We need to seek forgiveness when necessary. We need to offer forgiveness and let go of the pain and let go of the thoughts of retaliation and retribution. We need to just forgive and allow God to deal with the rest. And we do it not because of what it gets us, but because this is what it means to follow Jesus. I dare say that there are many of us here today that need a little workout relationally to be a little more relationally fit. And I close with just this final thought. Often in relationships, there are no black and white. Please listen to that. There are no black and white answers. Sometimes there are. For instance, if you're in a marriage and times are tough and you're not getting along and you're wondering if you should stay or you should go, I'm going to make this easy for you. If you're not being physically, mentally, or emotionally abused, God calls you to stay. Pretty simple. If you're in an abusive situation, go. God never called us to be beat upon all the time by a spouse. Those are the black and whites as far as I'm concerned. But for others, you may be listening and wondering what's the right thing to do. Well, for some, it is to lean into a strained relationship, to forgive, to re-engage someone. But for others, it's a call to move on. What's interesting is leading into this message, just this past week, I had two different conversations with two different people here at Ashworth Road, both of them dealing with difficult relationships. And one of them said, I feel God calling me to lean in. God's calling me to forgive. God's calling me to be a friend. Fantastic. If that's what God's calling you to do, do it. The other one was just the opposite. I feel like I've done all I can do. The situation's not great. I feel like I'm putting myself in harm by being in that relationship. I feel like I shouldn't do this anymore. If that's what you feel God's calling you to do, then do it. There's no black and white often when it comes to relationships. What I can guarantee you without the black and white is simply this, that if you earnestly seek God, if you earnestly seek His direction, He will guide you into what you should do. I've seen this many, many times in our people's life and in my own life personally. Ultimately, I think we should resolve this year to be very intentional in our relationships so we can be as relationally whole and healthy as we possibly can be.